नमः ओम विष्णुपराय कृष्णा प्रस्ताय बुद्धले श्रीमाति भक्ति परांत स्वामी नामनी नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारणी निवशेष शून्यवादी पश्चात तेज तारिणी सोम गणतिमिरंदसा गणंजना श्लोकया चक्षुर्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. आई ऑफर माय रिस्पेक्टफुल ओबेसेंसेस under the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Can someone turn off that other, this air conditioner here? Because I like flying in airplanes, but not today. It has like an airplane sound. So, today we're going to be reading at least one verse from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which deals with a very important subject matter. And actually, this subject matter is the matter which Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world to deal with. Many of you may be or may not be aware of Srila Prabhupada's second pranam mantra. His first pranam mantra is Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani. That's a generic mantra, because you can just put in your own guru's name. You know, Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate My Guru Iti Namani. It's a generic guru. My generic guru Iti Namani. So, but the second mantra is Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Bajarni Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deja Tari, which is Srila Prabhupada's mission in the Western world. So the translation of that mantra is Namaste Saraswati Devi. I offer obeisances and respects unto you, the dearmost disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is teaching Gauravani Pracharane, who's teaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And who's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, who appeared over 500 years ago. And he came to teach us pure devotional service. He's the Yuga avatar. Sometimes Krishna is called Tri Yuga. That means he only has three Yuga avatars that are apparent in the Satya, Treta, Dwarpa Yugas. But then Kali Yuga, there's also an incarnation, but he's called Channa avatar, not like Channa doll. But, you know, so you have to be careful how you translate that word, the hidden incarnation, and he is predicted in the Srimad Bhagavatam. For example, when Krishna was getting his name-giving ceremony from his guru, who was the one who gave Krishna his name-giving ceremony? Does anyone know? It starts with a G. Gargamuni. Actually, Prabhupada had a disciple who liked to collect money. He had his name Gargamuni. Prabhupada called him Gargamuni. But this wasn't the same person. So, Gargamuni, he said, your son, referring to Nanda Maharaja's son, of course, Krishna, has appeared in different ages, in the, you know, white and red, blackish and golden. So he actually said in the Bhagavatam that there's a golden avatar. That's why Lord Chaitanya is called Gaura Hari. That means the golden Lord. And in the Bhagavatam, it's also said what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does. Krishna Varna, Trisa Krishna Sango Pangas Parshadam, Yagyaya Hi Sankirtana Prayar, Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. The Bhagavatam says that those who have sufficient brains, what's called Sumedasa, the opposite of that is Duramedasa, means a dumb brain or Gobar brain, you know, like cow manure brain. Cow manure is pure, but not in your brain. So those who have good brains, then they will worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is accompanied by his associates. But Krishna Varnam Tuis Akrishna, but he's not blackish. But he's chanting his own holy name, Sango Pangasra, and he comes with his associates, Parshadam. And what does he do? Sankirtan. He engages in Sankirtan, which is the Yuga Dharma. Also, in the Brihat Naradiya Purana, you have this statement, Harinam, Harayanam, Harinam, Eva Kevalam, Kalona Stevena, Stevena, Steva Gatiranyata. What does that say? That in this days there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way than what? Chanting the holy name. And so in the Vedic context, When you say something three times, it has much more import than just one time. Like if I was just say, there's no other way than chanting the holy name, okay. Okay, that's nice. But if I say it three times, Kalo Nishteva, Nishteva, Nishteva. In this age of Kali, there is no other way than chanting the Lord's holy names, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam. Another word is Eva Kevalam. That's the one way. And of course, this is non-denominational. So anyway, so Gauravani Bacharani. So the message of Lord Chaitanya was carried by Srila Prabhupada, but specifically, he was empowered to speak about or defeat people who are impersonalists and voidists. Gauravani Bacharani. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachatejatari. That's very interesting. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. Okay. So Nirvishesha refers to people who understand that ultimately there's just one Brahman without distinction or qualities. Nirvishesha. And Shunyavadi means everything is void. That's like what some people misunderstand is Buddhism, voidism. Everything is nothing. Ultimately, there's nothing. Nothing is real. Strawberry fields forever. But nothing is real and whatever. You know, you're just an illusion. But who you are, you're not. I'm not. His not. He's not. She's not. The room's not. Nothing not. And therefore, you try to hear the sound of one hand clapping to try to understand that. It's kind of difficult, isn't it? So anyway, I mean, there's many different types of Buddhism. I'm not even attempting to talk about Buddhism tonight. But there's this voidism, which pervades not only the Western world, but also India, impersonalism. Because in India, you have the followers of a great personality named Shankaracharya. Some of you may have heard about him before. And he is an incarnation of Lord Shiva. And he preached Nirvishesha. He preached impersonalism. Wow. So why would he preach impersonalism? And why would Prabhupada have the mission of annihilating, you know, the impersonal understanding as well as the voidist understanding? Well, there's a reason for that. Sripad Shankaracharya, let's go back a few thousand years in our time machine, back to the past, or back to the future, or whatever. So we go back in our time machine, and many, many years ago, before the year zero, A.D., you know, Common Era, I think everybody knows that. Zero doesn't mean there was nothing before it. It just means it's a common way of understanding. You mean because you have B.C., before the Common Era, B.C.E., you know, 100 B.C.E., 200 B.C.E., and of course then you have the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which occurred approximately 3,000 B.C.E. And we have proof of that because in the Mahabharata, there is astrological evidence of the different cycles of the planets, and the scientists have ascertained the exact date of the Mahabharata war based upon their mathematical calculations using computers. So anyway, but let's not go back that far. Even though the Mahabharata war is very interesting, you know, we all like killing and Karna and Draupadi, you know, these are our favorite personalities. And I even like Ravana, but that's millions of years ago. Ravana and Kumbhakarna is even more dear to me than Ravana. So, but let's just go back to, you know, approximately, well, over 2,000 years. So before 2,000 years, the Vedas were followed very strictly in India by a class of Brahmins, but these Brahmins didn't understand the purpose of the Vedas. Because Krishna says in the Gita, what does he say? Vedaischasavera ameva vedyo. By all the Vedas I am to be known. You know, so these Brahmanas didn't understand. In fact, they became Brahmanas, or they didn't become, they were born as Brahmanas. It was a hereditary thing. You know, you're born as a Brahmin, a Trivedi, Chaturvedi, Univedi, Octavedi, you know, whatever. So, Sharma, whatever. So you're born in a Brahmin family and automatically you're a Brahmin. And that's pretty nice because automatically you're assured a steady income. Wow. I mean, it's just like getting an inheritance. I mean, we'd all like to be the son of Bill Gates. right? Raise your hand if you'd like to be Bill Gates' son. Nobody's honest here except for me. So we all like, you know, to get that inheritance. Well, you know, billions of dollars. Just think of what I could do for Krishna. I could build a new temple. I could, what else could I do? Go to the moon? No. What's the use of going to the moon? So these brahmanas, or so-called brahmanas, because remember, it's Kali Yuga. Remember, Kali Yuga started about 5,000 years ago. After that, all sorts of interesting persons started taking birth in Brahmin families. Just like in the previous Yuga, all sorts of interesting persons were taking birth in Kshatriya families. That's why Krishna had to come down, you know, and just have this nice Mahabharat war. Get rid of the demoniac kings that had taken over the earth. So Kali Yuga means that many interesting people take birth, not all bad, take birth in Brahmin families, Brahmin in name only. Because what is a Brahmin? Bhagavad Gita teaches us, what is it? Samadhamakdabhacho cham shantir ajvamevacha. A Brahmin is equal, poised, sense control, doesn't get angry. Like if a Brahmin gets angry unnecessarily, you're not a Brahmin. You're a Shudra. So, he's austere, he studies the Vedic literatures, he applies, he understands the purpose of the Vedic, jnana vijnana, he understands the purpose of the Vedic literatures. Astikam, he's honest. Not that he has some like hidden bank account and sells all the property of the temples for his children's education. This is happening. This happens in India, it happens in the West too. You know, we're not partisan like that. So, you know, many religious people in America, you read all the time about this scandal, about this religious leader. One religious leader had a jet that was worth like $20 million, and he said, it wasn't good enough for me, I want a jet that's worth $80 million. So, this is going on. So, especially in Kali Yuga, they say, the statement of the Bhagavatam is that religion is just a change of dress. That one is considered religious, just like, you know, you consider me a sannyasi, just because I'm wearing saffron. But little do you know, I won't tell you, but little do you know what my actual characteristics are. You know, of course, I don't suggest putting a webcam in my house and watching me 24/7, but I do usually behave myself. So it's not that a dress makes a Brahmin. Just like when I was young, you know, as a little baby, kid, I thought that by putting on a Superman outfit, I could fly. So I put my cape, you know, a cape with an S on it, and I jumped off the chair, and I fell flat on my face. So the outfit doesn't make the man or the woman. And you have great personalities like Lord Rishabhadev, who basically looked like a slob. And he's a great, you know, pure devotee, Shaktivesh Avatar, the Supreme Personality of Goddess. You can't really judge in Kali Yuga by the birth or by how someone looks or by how someone dresses. So these brahmanas over 2,000 years ago, what were they doing? They were exploiting people because they were performing all these sacrifices. Brahmanas, yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dana pratigraha. A Brahmin does sacrifice, and he gets charity for it. And so many sacrifices do you do today, so much money do I make tomorrow. They have a price. Nowadays, the Brahmanas actually have a price list. Like if you go sometimes to temples, you go, all right, you want to have a Namakarna for your kid. That'll be $500. Otherwise, your kid can't get a name. Oh my God, just let me give him the name Joe or Bill or something like that. And then you got to pay for the astrologer, you know, so much money for the astrologer. But these were all Brahmins before who did everything just for free, and they accepted charity. So the whole Brahminical priestly class in every religion, everywhere around the world, became contaminated because of what we call pecuniary interests. That means financial interest. And so especially they liked performing sacrifices in which they were killing animals. Like even today in India you go, at least when I went like 2 years ago, last time I went to India, so long ago. They have like Cully's Slaughterhouse. You ever seen this? Never seen that? I've seen it. In Bengal, at least. So the Brahmanas were running basically killing operations, not only in India, but also if you look at Christian history or Jewish history, they were doing this in Jerusalem too. They were killing lambs there, and the Brahmanas, I guess, in India, they were killing murgis. Whatever. So they were killing animals in the name of religion. They were exploiting people, making money in the name of religion, and they wanted to keep a monopoly. In other words, keep the supply of Brahmanas down so no one else could become a Brahman unless they were born in a Brahman family. So they keep the price. You know, law of supply and demand, then price goes up if you keep the supply down. That's called monopoly. So therefore, anyway, they were doing so many horrible things in the name of the Vedic literatures. So Shankaracharya had the duty to take them away from the Vedic literatures. I mean, Buddha, sorry. Got it wrong. Buddha had the duty to take them away from the Vedic literatures by preaching voidism. So he decried the Vedic literatures. And Buddhism became very, very prominent all over India because of the Emperor Ashoka. There's a whole history about that. Then, later on, Shankaracharya brought people back to the Vedic literatures, but with sort of a similar understanding to that which the Buddhists were teaching, which is sort of like a nihilistic or an impersonalistic understanding. Why did all this have to happen? Because as long as people are killing, they can never understand the purpose of the Vedic literatures. And killing in Kali Yuga, in the name of religion, is prohibited. There's different things that are prohibited in Kali Yuga. Animal sacrifice, that's one of them. You know, but there's other things that are prohibited. But still, it's a heinous act. So the Bhagavatam states in the 10th canto, first chapter, it says, Nivritta Tarshar Upagiyamanat Bhavoshara Shrotra Mano Biramat Kautama Shloka Gunanavadat Puman Vidajeta Vina Pashugnat, that those who are killers of animals, guess what? They will never understand spiritual life. Impossible, according to the Bhagavatam. You may say, well, I'm very sincere. Well, I ain't going to understand it. Because why? Because to understand spiritual life, you have to be free from karma. Yesham twantakatam karma. Karma. You have to become free from karma, first of all, and you have to rise above the modes of nature. So that's required. So if you're engaged in animal killing, and Prabhupada talked about that a lot whenever he met religious people in the Western world, he'd always ask them the question, Jesus Christ, or the Bible says what? Thou shalt not kill. And they said, well, he didn't mean that. He meant murder. Well, Jesus Christ would have said murder if he meant murder, but anyway, so Prabhupada always got them on that particular point. So therefore, Shankaracharya had to bring them back to the Vedas, whereas Buddha took them away from meat eating and killing, because Buddha's doctrine, one of his main doctrines, apart from the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, was ahimsa. Ahimsa paramo dharma. Like if you look at the history with Emperor Ashoka, Emperor Ashoka went, before he became a Buddhist, we're going back and forth in time a little here, he engaged in battles where there was horrendous killing. And when he saw the cruelty, he decided to give it up. And so then he took shelter of Buddhism, and therefore Buddhism was spread all over. So it was very important to get people to stop eating meat. And then Shankaracharya comes, and he says, well, come back to the Vedas halfway, because at least you're accepting the Vedas, and you're not eating meat now. And so I'm going to give you an interpretation that's not really too much different than Buddhism, by indirectly interpreting the Vedas. Now, when you have these Vedic, what do I mean by Vedas? You know, you have the four original Vedas, Yajur, Samhit, Atharva, Rig Veda, sorry. And you also, then you have the Itihasa Purana, you have the Upanishads, you have the Vedanta Sutras, and then you have Itihasa Purana and Panchama Veda Uchate. So that's what we mean by Veda. But the actual word Veda means knowledge, and Vedanta means the conclusion or the ultimate understanding of knowledge. So therefore, in order to bring people back to the Vedas, he couldn't give them everything. They weren't ready for it. So he taught a covered Buddhism. Now we're talking now not about the common people in India. We're talking about the intellectuals. Not because India has an amazing history of intellectual spiritualism. Much more than any other place in the world. We should be proud of India. Everyone should be proud of their coming from India. Because if you look, let's get a little technical about philosophy. If you look at, let's say, any other scripture other than the Vedic scriptures, you will not find something called epistemology there. That's a fancy word. Which means, how do you know what you know? Like, I can talk to anybody of any religion and convince them they don't know anything. How do I do that? I just ask them, how do you know what you know? And they say, well, my mother taught me. Is that perfect? Your mother's perfect? Oh, my father taught me. This person taught me. That person. No. Or it makes sense to me. You know, like people have all these sayings. Everything is one. But what does that mean? Where'd you get your information from? So, therefore, the Vedic literatures are just, and the intellectuals in India are billions of miles ahead of the intellectuals in any other place in the world. I mean, if you read some of the literatures that we have here, like the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, you'll see an elaborate exposition about the science of knowledge. Like, how do you know what you know? So we need, each and every one of us needs to ask that question of ourselves and of others. When someone tells us something, let's say if someone's worshiping a demigod, well, here, this demigod is God. And then you can just ask them, how do you know? And they say, well, that's the way my mother taught me. How did she know? Well, that's the way her mother taught. How did she know? I don't know. Of course, don't try that with your mother. She'll get angry. You got to be careful. I'm just giving a little example there. So that's actually called epistemology. So we should be very proud of all this elaborate information in the Vedic literature. So what did Shankaracharya do? Shankaracharya basically did an indirect interpretation of what was written in the Vedic literatures to prove his point. And I'll give you an example of an indirect interpretation. There's one famous commentator, Dr. Radhakrishna, maybe some of you have heard about him. And he commented on one verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Was that Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyajimam Namaskuru? Right? And what does that verse say? Does anyone know? Think of me, worship me, become my devotee. How many times is the word me used here? More than that. Manmana Bhavamad Madhbhakto Madhyashi Mam Namaskuru. I think it's about seven or eight times in that verse. So if I ask something of you, and I say, you know, I'm really hungry, can you bring me some prasadam, bring it to my house, and knock on my door, and you say, that's not really what you mean, then I would say you are a rascal. So this commentator, forgive me, I'm not calling him a rascal, he's very intelligent, that's up to you to decide. This commentator, when he said, or commented on this verse, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyajimam Namaskuru, he said, it's not to Krishna, Krishna's not referring to himself, he's referring to the unborn beginningless within himself. Wow, what does that mean? I have no idea. So he's taking an indirect meaning to prove something. And so I'm not going to read this verse here because I got off on a not on a tangent, but just explaining everything. So in order to explain the absolute truth, these people, followers of Shankaracharya, they have several different aspects of their philosophy. One is called Brahma Parinamavad. Now I'll explain what that means. That Brahman, the supreme Brahman, you know, the supreme spirit, becomes transformed. Now, that goes against the Vedic literature. Does anybody know the beginning of the Isopanishad? Om? What does it say? Translation. Yeah. The supreme absolute truth is perfect and complete, and everything that emanates from the, he remains the complete, even though so many complete emanations come from him. So that's the opposite of transformation. So Brahman is never transformed. Krishna is not transformed. And the Brahma Samhita, what does it say? Ishwara Paramas Krishna, Sachit Ananda Vigraha, Nanadi Radhi Govinda Sarvakarna Karna. I'm sorry for all this philosophy. I like it. So anyway, Sarvakarna Karma. Krishna is the cause of it. And he has a body made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. You cannot transform eternity, bliss, and knowledge. You can transform this wood. You can transform your body. You can transform the material energy. That's called Shakti Parinam. Krishna's energies can be transformed. But the absolute truth is not transformed. So that's one philosophy that Shankaracharya presents. Another one that they sometimes present is called Brahma Vivarta Vad. Does anyone know what that means? I think Aditya Narayan probably knows. Brahma Vivarta means illusion. That Brahman is an illusion. In other words, I'm God. Can you believe it? Why would I be sitting here if I was God? I'd probably be driving around my car enjoying life. You know, what am I doing? I'd have someone else give class. Anyway, so I'm God, you're all God. I've just forgotten it. You've forgotten it, I've forgotten it. You're me, I'm you, and we're all one. It sounds beautiful, doesn't it? But it's not true. That's called Brahma Vivarta. But there is a real transformation and there is a real Vivarta, or illusion. And that real illusion is that we are thinking we are this body and we have so many upadis. Upadi means designations. I realized this before I came to Krishna consciousness. I realized that designations were not real. I did a whole presentation for my university class, music class, saying, who are you? Are you the name that your parents gave you? Are you your body? Actually, it was an interesting presentation. So that's called an upadi. So we're an illusion. We've been hypnotized by Krishna's illusory energy, just like if you go to a staged hypnotist and he says, you are a rabbit. You are a rabbit. I've seen that. I've gone. I never got hypnotized like that. I never jumped on the stage like a rabbit, but I saw people getting hypnotized. So Krishna has this mama maya durachya, this illusory energy. You are a man. You are a woman. You're part of this world. You have so many things to do. Yes. Close your eyes. Breathe deeply. You will believe it. You do need to drink beer. Of course, yeah, I'm just joking. You do need a new car. You do need to buy a new house, even though the mortgage will take 50 years, 60, 100 years. That's all right. Your children will pay it off. So, you know, we get into this illusion. And the funny thing about the illusion is what? Punak purnas char vita char vadanam. We keep doing the same thing. We think we can get a different result. That's what Prahlad Maharaj says in the Bhagavatam. Matirna Krishna Paratos Vatelva. Anyway, so that's Vivarta. So there is Vivarta, but Brahman is never in Vivarta. We're Vivarta. We're subject to Vivarta. And as far as Parinam transformation, yes. Our soul doesn't get transformed, but the body gets transformed. If you don't believe it, just take a picture of yourself, or right now, compare it to a picture when you were a little baby. Yeah, you look different. And, you know, I look in the mirror and say, well, that's transformation right there in front of me. Who is that old man looking back at me? So that's called Parinam. So the material energy is endlessly mutable, according to the Bhagavad Gita. And the spiritual energy is not changeable. So when you go back to the spiritual world, you have an eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna, and that doesn't change. And you don't get old, you don't get sick. And Krishna doesn't get old, he doesn't get sick. And there's no misery. Isn't that nice? So, but the impersonalists under Shankaracharya, which Srila Prabhupada was fighting quite a bit, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Dejatarni, would say that Brahman gets transformed. So that's really what this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is dealing with. I think that's enough philosophy for today. Anyone have any questions or comments? Yes. Yes. There's eclipses. There's phenomena in the stars that are mentioned in the Mahabharata. And the scientists have computers by which they can understand when that particular solar or lunar or star configuration was there. You know, they can look at the stars 10,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago, or 5,000 years from now. You know, it's quite an easy thing with a computer to do that. The primary stars. Of course, they can't predict all these different little objects in space that are going to collide with the Earth and destroy all of us one day, maybe. But at least the major stars, the eclipses, because of the Mahabharata, it describes a particular eclipse. I mean, of course, you have the one eclipse, the solar eclipse, where Krishna and the gopis met at Kurukshetra. So we can actually pin down that particular date. It's really interesting. So people question the dating of the Mahabharata. Well, we have scientific evidence concerning the dating. Because the material energy, at least the way Krishna set it up, works as a machine, yantra. It's a machine. So you can actually predict. You know, like I can tell you when the next eclipse is going to be here. You shouldn't look at the eclipse because that's considered inauspicious. I just had to tell a lot of my disciples in India, don't go outside to look at the eclipse. You know, it's all you need. Even there's that story when Krishna looked at the moon on Ganesh Chaturdasi, then he lost his reputation. You know the story? It's an interesting story in the Puranas. You're not supposed to look at the moon on Ganesh Chaturdasi. So Krishna saw a reflection of the moon on Ganesh Chaturdasi, and then people started criticizing him for stealing the Shyamantaka jewel. And he had to actually get back his reputation by getting the jewel back. It's a really interesting story. So yes, so I hope that answers the question. It actually has been done in India and in other places, ascertaining the exact date of the Mahabharata war. You know, it's not just someone's speculation. It's scientific evidence of when the war took place. I mean, why else would it be described like that? I mean, they didn't have those computers 2,000 years ago in India, or when the Mahabharata was written down. So why? How would they know? All right, so, yes. Depends on how well you chant Hare Krishna. It's a quality. Yeah, we should still be careful about dealing with the stars. I mean, you can chant Hare Krishna and jump from a balcony and you're still going to... But if you're Prahlad Maharaj, then you can have your father throw you off a balcony and then you'll survive. I mean, I gave the example the other week, that I was praying very hard to Lord Nrisimhadev when the police pulled behind me because I was speeding. But I'm not Prahlad Maharaj. I say, Namaste Narasimhaya Prahlada Lada Dayane Hiranyakashipu Bhakshaha. Please, Lord Nrisimhadev, save me, save me, save me. And the policeman came up and said, do you know you've been going 24 miles over the speed limit? And I said, Hare Krishna. And he said, doesn't matter. Here's your ticket. So instead of taking shelter of Lord Nrisimhadev, I took shelter of my lawyer, who got me off. Anyway, so if you're pure devotee, Lord Nrisimhadev will take care of your tickets. But if you're not, go to your lawyer. Anyway, don't try to take service from God. Try to serve God. We do pray to God for protection, but we should also wear a seatbelt, because God has given us a seatbelt to wear. All right, any other questions? I know it's kind of hot in here, and I'm sorry that I had the air conditioner turned off, but it's hard for me to hear myself think if the air conditioner is on. So thank you very much, and there'll be what next? Okay, there'll be some announcements. We can turn the air conditioner back on to alleviate threefold miseries. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Hare Krishna. So let's thank His Holiness Bir Krishna Goswami Maharaj for a wonderful class. So as I mentioned earlier, we are observing the Ekadashi Vrat today. Today is Mahadwadashi. So we don't have a sponsor this evening for the feast. So if anyone would like to sponsor, it's a very auspicious day to make a donation for the pleasure of their lordships. So if you'd like to sponsor, please let us know. Also coming up on the calendar on 28th of June is actually we'll be celebrating our Panihati festival. So I think many of you know this, like one of the very fun, exciting festivals of the year. And in this festival, it's actually a whole episode, a very wonderful pastime that happened in India in this place known as Panihati. And I'm sure Maharaj, you'll be here on, yeah. So Maharaj will be explaining that entire pastime. But the essence of the pastime is by serving the Vaishnavas, we actually receive the mercy of their lordships. So we encourage everyone, so what we do on that day is like we have these beautiful painted pots, and then in that pots we fill like very special prasadam, which is very unique to this festival, and then we'll distribute the pots. So we encourage anyone who's like good at painting or, you know, you just have the interest to get a pot from, you know, Walmart, Home Depot, and it could be like different sizes, and you can paint the pot and you can bring it on that day. And please come earlier. The festival will start from 4 p.m. onwards, but if you come by 2 p.m. then we can decorate the pot, fill it with wonderful prasadam, and then we'll distribute. So it's still like 2 weeks for this, so please, if you need some ideas of like what to paint and things like that, please let us know. You can contact me and I can share. We have like a whole database of images that you could use to paint the pots. But it's all of you bringing these pots, and then we have a wonderful festival. So please consider painting pots, and if you need more information, please get in touch with me. So again, please mark the date, 28th of June. And also on that day, if you like to bring any offerings for their lordships, like sweets or different savories, and we'll use that to decorate the pots. Okay, and also on that day, if you like to come early from 2 to 4, we'll be actually setting up and decorating all the pots. So you can also come early and help us with that part. Okay, so please mark the calendar, and if you like to paint a pot, please do let us know. And if you need any ideas, please contact us. Okay, so that's the Panihati festival. So 28th of June. And also, I have an announcement. So this summer, we'll be having an online summer camp for children. And the title is Life Lessons from Gita and Bhagavata. And so there are going to be two age groups in this, from age 4 to 7 years. And the second batch will be from 8 to 13 years. Okay, and this is going to be online, and the final session is going to have a field trip to our farm where we have cows. So it'll be a wonderful, but it's 6 weeks, the summer camp, so 18 sessions. So every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, it's from 4 to 5. And it's going to be very interactive with a lot of like learning shlokas. It'll give you an overview of Bhagavad Gita. And it's going to focus on lessons that the children can remember all through their lives. So there'll be lots of stories and discussions and lessons from the stories. And there'll be games, activities, bhajans, presentations, projects. So it's going to be very, very interactive, and it'll be really nice for the children to join in and learn Krishna consciousness in a very fun and interactive way. Okay? So it's going to start on 21st of June. Okay, so it's a short time, so if you'd like to register, please contact me, and I can give you more details about this. And also the information has already been sent out on our groups, so if you need more information for this online children camp, please do let us know. Okay, so 28th of June is a Panihati festival, you can paint a pot for that, and then 21st, the summer camp starts online, so if you'd like to register for that. Okay. So that's the announcements, and also we'd like to thank the devotees who cooked this evening. We have Srinivas Prabhu, Nandini Mataji, and their family. We have Vivek, who's been coming almost every week to help us. He's sitting right there. And Kalindi Mataji, who's very committed to come and cook every week. And Gayatri here. So thank you. It's always a nice service. It's always a nice service to come earlier and help in the kitchen, and you can cook for their lordship. So if you'd like to help with the seva, you can again let us know, and you know, we can schedule you for one of the Sundays. Okay. So thank you so much. So now we'll have prasadam downstairs, and since today is Ekadashi, we encourage everyone, you can come back, sing more bhajans, kirtans for their lordships, or chant more japa. Ekadashi is a day like we increase our seva, our sadhana for the pleasure of their lordships. Okay, so thank you all so much. So we'll have prasadam now. We can chant the prasadam prayers. Mahaprasade Govinde, Nama Brahmani Vaishnave, Swalpa Punya Vritam Raja,